seated, please.
The court is ready to hear argument now in 080061, State of Texas versus Central Expressway Sign Associates.
May it please the court, Ms. Bonin will present an argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. The issue in this case is whether valuation of a billboard site acquired through condemnation may be based on advertising revenue generated by the billboard operator. There are three primary reasons why the answer to this question is no. Valuation of a billboard site may not be based on advertising revenue. First, loss of business income is not compensable in Texas condemnations. Second, billboard advertising revenue is in fact business income. And third, no exception should be made for billboards or billboard sites. First, it is clear that loss of business income is not compensable in the state of Texas. There is longstanding precedent that holds such. For example, in the Herndon case, which was a writ-refused case, the court held that evidence of gross revenue and profits from the landowner's grocery and restaurant business could not be considered in determining the value of property acquired in condemnation. In the Reeves versus City of Dallas case, the court that held that evidence of profits from a lessee's restaurant and dance hall business could not be considered in determining condemnation damages, even though it was alleged that the business could not, in fact, be relocated. Second, it is fairly self-evident that
You can't consider it at all.
It is only no, the advertising revenue cannot be considered at all, although if it is connected to the actual rental income, it may be considered in that way.
Part of the rent, you could consider it.
Yes.
How about if it was a friend or an old lease or for whatever reason, your rent was below what the market would bear? Could somebody make an argument? Yes, I know this is what I'm only collecting $100 a month, but it's worth a lot more than that because it's on Central Expressway and I could get a lease it to somebody for a whole bunch of money. So could you argue kind of indirectly, see how valuable it is? It's really worth more than what I'm currently receiving.
No, Your Honor, in that situation, you wouldn't look to the advertising revenue, but what you could do is you could look at the market rental rates instead of looking simply to the actual rental that was being received in that case.
Assuming everybody in the market is not a charity giving away their lease.
Assuming that, and I think you can assume that with billboards.
Most markets.
And let me make sure I understand the joint venture's testimony in the case about the value. And I didn't go back and look at their testimony, but did they take the revenue stream for the life of the lease and capitalize it and reduce it to present value? Is that what happened? Is that how they came up with their 2.5 to 2.8?
They took the advertising revenue stream and capitalized it. In other words, they took $168,000 a year and capitalized it and said, well, that's what the land is worth.
And did they take into account that the sign had been moved and was generating revenue at another site?
No, they did not. You know, the fact that billboard advertising revenue is, in fact, business income can be determined simply by looking at all the activities that involved in the outdoor advertising business. You know, the outdoor advertising company has to have personnel who do many things. They have to secure and maintain permits. They have to erect and illuminate billboards. They have to maintain and repair those billboards. They actually have to get out there and pursue these advertising contracts. The two contracts that are in the record in this case are simply examples of the amount that you could get by somebody having a contract for the sign. One of those contracts was just for a month. So you have to have a generous, a lot of business activity that is going on by the billboard advertising company.
I noticed that in the briefing, but why does that matter? I mean, let's say that this were mom and pop who leased this sign and just allowed somebody to put one sign up on it. I mean, why would that be any different?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've read the arguments about how it's so labor-intensive and strategically operated, but I didn't understand the difference that would make based on the law as you've argued it.
Well, the difference that would make, even if it were operated, if the billboard were being operated by the owner, you still need to look at the amount of income that is being generated by the land, not that is being generated by the business. And you do that by looking at rental income. Even if it were owner-operated, if you are doing an income approach, which is just one of the approaches to value property, then you look at rental income. You don't look at business income. I mean, it's the same way with any other commercial property. If you're doing an income approach.
So I think your answer is it really doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know, other courts in other states have held, in fact, that income from billboards is a function of the outdoor advertising business and is not generated solely from a real property interest. And the appraiser, the state's appraiser in this case, actually testified that the advertising revenue from the billboard was business income and that the revenue that was being received by Viacom included payment for more than just the sign. Now, there is no reason to make an exception for billboards or billboard sites. I mean, there is an exception that is recognized in the Herndon case that says that if the revenues are derived from the intrinsic nature of the real estate itself, as, for example, revenue from a quarry or revenue from a farming activity where the land actually produces the materials from which the revenue is derived. That is not the situation that we have here. I mean, to the extent that the advertising revenues stem from the high traffic counts on the state's adjoining highways, they're not based on the intrinsic nature of this real estate. Instead, they're based on the public investment and the use of the adjoining property as highways. And this court has repeatedly held that a landowner has no vested interest in the traffic passing by his or her property. If you make an exception for billboards or billboard sites, the exception is going to effectively swallow the rule. If we have to value billboard sites based on business income received by the operator, then why shouldn't every other commercial enterprise be valued in that way? The exception effectively would allow every property owner to come in and argue that the business it was operating on the property was actually, its profitability was due more to the land itself than on the other factors that make businesses profitable, and that their property should be valued by the actual profits of the business. And what you would have, you could have two businesses side by side, or two commercial pieces of property. Say, for example, two restaurants. One's a very high-end restaurant, one's a McDonald's. Well, in this market, that high-end restaurant may be about to go bankrupt because it's not getting any business. But if the land and the improvements are exactly the same and then they're in the same location, then that property for condemnation purposes should be valued equally. The McDonald's that is still making a great profit in our economy should not have a higher, or the property on which McDonald's sits should not have a higher value than the property on which the high-end restaurant sits.
Excuse me, but sometimes the properties are very similar. It's about location, location, location. You can have pick a service station, similar type of product, one in one corner, the other directly across the street. In the neighborhood where we live, there is one that cannot stay in business. Doesn't matter what kind of gas station is there. The one right across the street, which seems to be as difficult to get to as the other one, thrives. So why can't you do something different in evaluating?
Well, to the extent that the location is in fact a factor in the example that you suggest, that will be taken into account by the amount of rental income that is brought in by the property. And, you know, you would do that by looking at rental income of similarly situated properties. And so location is taken into account, but it cannot be taken into account simply by saying that all of the profits of a business are somehow tied to its location and that we value property simply by looking at the profits of a business.
What if you had a situation where there was so much regulation of where you could put a billboard that in a high-profile area, because of grandfathering clauses, truly there was only one spot for a billboard in a densely urban area? I mean, I realize that's almost impossible to imagine, but theoretically, could it then be so unique and tied to the type of land that it is, that, and considering the regulatory restrictions, that it really could not be replaced? If you can't put it somewhere else, would you think that another valuation method would apply?
No, Your Honor. The problem is that you would still be allowing compensation for the business as opposed to compensation for the property. You know, for example, there's a very recent case out of the Austin Court of Appeals that unfortunately I did not cite in my brief. It's the AVM-HUO Limited case in which a party actually sued based on inverse condemnation because they were no longer, after a condemnation, they could no longer relocate their sexually oriented business because of zoning regulations. They had nowhere to put their business, and so they sued for damage to the business. And the court said that it did not matter that they could not relocate their business, that they were not entitled to compensation. And it specifically relied on the Reeves case and the fact that the Reeves case took that into account, that the business could not be relocated. You know, normally businesses can be relocated, but the court should not change the rules simply because there are times when there are going to be incidental business losses that a party is not compensated for. I mean, obviously, when the state takes property, it's for a public purpose, you know, to build roads or, you know, other entities that take property to build hospitals, to build schools. And, you know, for the common good, sometimes there are incidental losses. They're not compensated. When your home is taken for a public purpose, you get the market value, but you don't get the intrinsic value that your home has to you. I mean, in the same sense, when commercial property is taken, you get the market value of the property, but you don't get compensation for potential damage to your business. If we had a case-by-case analysis of this issue with respect to every condemnation of a commercial property, trying to determine, well, was the business profitability based more on location than on other factors, you know, again, the rule would be swallowed and there would be vast amounts of litigation over this very factor, with every landlord and tenant claiming that the business's profitability was based more on location than it was on other factors. In this case, this billboard was properly appraised by, or I'm sorry, the billboard site was properly appraised by the state's appraiser. Mr. Wall valued the easement as if it were owned by one person, valuing the property itself as he was required to under the undivided fee rule, which embraces all of the interest in the property. So he valued the correct property, and he used an appropriate approach. He used the income approach in the way it is always used, by looking at the rental income that was brought in by the property. However, he was not allowed to testify. The jury was entitled to hear his testimony about the true value of the property, and because it was not allowed to hear his testimony, there is reversible error. So for that reason, the trial court erred. The trial court also erred in admitting the testimony of SASE's principals for the same reasons that their testimony that we've already talked about, their testimony was based on a capitalization of all of the advertising income. You know, for that same reason, the testimony of SASE's principals was incompetent, and thus there is no evidence to support the jury's verdict. These are independent reasons, all of them, as to why this case should be reversed.
If we were to say that that's an appropriate measure, if we were to agree with opposing counsel's position that you could capitalize the advertising revenue and that would be your condemnation award, that should be included, Is there any sort of credit that should be given because the sign was removed and there was some mitigation?
Certainly, there are a lot of things that should be taken into account if you're going to look at the advertising revenue and value property that way. I mean, you'd need to look at all the various expenses of the business. And, you know, it would basically be allowing, given that the billboard has in fact been relocated, if you do that, you are allowing a property owner to recover for lost opportunity cost. And that is something that's never been compensable in condemnation. I mean, this advertising revenue stream is still out there and being received by Viacom because they've been able to relocate the billboard to another location, and therefore they shouldn't be compensated because they haven't actually suffered any loss. For all of these reasons, we ask that you reverse the judgments of the lower courts.
Thank you, counsel. The court is now ready to hear argument from the respondent.
Court, Mr. Staley and Ms. Ford will present an argument for the respondents. Mr. Staley will open with the first 10 minutes.
Mr. Stanley, I just want to ask this question while it's fresh on my mind. Has your client suffered any loss?
I'm sorry.
Has your client suffered any loss?
We'll have suffered plenty of loss if we don't win this case. My client, who is the owner of this piece of property, has lost his property to the state. They've taken away probably one of the best signboard locations in the city of Dallas. And then he would have lost a significant amount of money if the court rules as the state would ask you to. This piece of property is worth a lot of money. It's probably one of the best billboard signs. It's the High Five in Dallas. And the land itself, he has lost the right to put a signboard on his property. And that's a significant loss for him. I'm sorry. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, I just was.
Yes, sir.
The response from your adversary.
I don't represent the signboard company. I just represent the people that own the land.
Okay. But the response from your adversary was that your client suffered no loss.
Well, that's I hate to use the word insanity, but that borders on it.
Well, let me. Here's what I'm having a hard time understanding.
Yes, ma'am.
As the easement holder, and not the advertising company. The revenue that you are receiving is the rental from what Viacom pays.
So what I'm receiving?
Yes.
Yes, but the rental that's being received is the rental that's being received on the property put to its highest and best use, which is as a signboard. And
which is reflected in the rent that Viacom's paying.
Well, the law is, as I understand it, and always has been, how that is split is no concern of the state.
So
that is the second issue. I'm sorry.
You are advocating for Viacom's position then?
I am advocating for CESA's position and also Viacom's position.
Let me take out Viacom.
Yes, ma'am.
And presume that position will be argued forcefully.
Right.
Let me just look at the easement holder.
Yes.
It's hard for me to understand why the easement holder is out more than they would have been entitled to if you take the remainder of the rent, capitalize it, reduce it to present value. Why is that not the value for the easement holder?
Because the issue submitted in this case was the highest and was the fair market value of the land. And the law in Texas is that you use the unified fee rule. And you come up with that value of the whole property as if it was owned by one person. And then that in the second issue in a condemnation case is divided. It was improper for the state's witness to come in and to say, well, I found that their interest was worth zero, and it used the test that's used in determining the second issue, that is contract value versus market value, and therefore the contract value and the market value are the same, and that means zero. The point of it is that the state is required to, and they admit that they have to use the unified fee rule, and that's exactly what the unified fee rule is. When you answer that first issue, then you appraise the fair market value of the land, and that was the issue submitted, and that's the issue that was answered.
Unified fee rule is people that own different interests in real estate.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Viacom doesn't have any interest in real estate.
The undivided fee rule applies in all eminent domain cases, as I understand it.
Right, but it's to real estate. It doesn't cover business income.
That's true.
And so, I'm, I mean, I'm if the property, if your easement is really worth $1 million or $168,000, whatever it is a year, because that's what you can get, that's just an argument you should raise your rent, isn't it?
Well, location, 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 and location generates the income, not the business, and that's what all the testimony was. There was, the court needs to understand.
Wait, I think you just said location generates the business.
No, it generates the income.
I mean, generates the income.
Yes.
So, location, location, location. Rent, rent, rent. I mean, your rent is a reflection of the value of the location.
That's exactly right. And the rent that was received in this was $168,000 a year.
Not by your client.
For the property.
That's
right. Under the undivided fee rule, you don't have two clients. You don't have two people. You only have one person. That one person got $165,000 or $168,000 a year.
I'm just wondering how far that goes. If I've got two identical properties, as they say, and the market rate's $1,000 a month, and one of us gets somebody who's a great business person and makes $1 jillion a month. That doesn't make that land more valuable.
But in this case, the testimony was exactly as I presented it to you under the unified fee rule, and there was no objection to it. The state never raised one scintilla of evidence.
That's because the trial judge struck everybody's experts.
Well, he struck them rightfully so, Your Honor, and I'd
I wanted to just ask you this. I know it's always been the law in Texas that a owner can say what the value of their property is, but this is very technical property. Does it make sense that we strike all the experts and just have the people least likely to know get on the stand?
Yes, and I'll show you exactly why.
Thank you.
And I'm curious to hear why, but it really doesn't matter because everybody's used this method they use the same method as the expert that was struck. And so we're really focused on the legal question as to whether the business profits.
And the legal question is whether or not, I think the issue was raised, is whether he should have been stricken. And it should have been, because here's what he testified to. Under the unified fee rule, in this instance, Viacom owned a lease, and there was a leasehold interest and a lessee's interest. And here's what he testified to. Did you consider the interest of Viacom in making your appraisal? What interest did Viacom? Is the lessee successor to Infinity? Yes. I did not consider their interest in this appraisal. That's a violation of the unified fee rule. Mr. Wall, what were you asked to do in this case? To value Cessa's interest. It's not Cessa's interest. The jury is to find the value of the undivided fee. And so in this case, he didn't do that. You testified under oath in your deposition that you only valued the interest of Cessa, didn't you? That's correct. The fee simple interest of Cessa. Cessa didn't own the fee simple interest. Cessa owned the least fee interest. You came up with a fair value of $360,000, did you not? Yes. Is that for the Cessa's interest? That's for Cessa's interest. They took Viacom's interest and Cessa's interest, and that was the issue being tried. What's the fair market value of the land, considering both of those interests put together? And the judge addressed it properly.
I think valuing the land according to Cessa's easement interest only is the wrong way to appraise the land according to all the guidance I'm given by the Texas Supreme Court, and I agree with that. He was absolutely dead on.
Well, how do you reconcile the well-established principle that business profits aren't compensable in a tax?
It's not business profits, it's rent. And that's what all the testimony is. We have 50 pages of testimony from Mr. Randy Perry about the fact that it's rent generated by the location, that it is not business income. There was not a single objection in 50 pages of testimony. The problem with this case is that the state never objected to anything, and all the testimony came in, and the testimony is dead on that it was rent, not a business income, and there is no objection to any of that. There's no objection to anything that our witnesses testified to insofar as the value of the land is concerned. And they use the unified fee rule, both of them. They both testified that they knew what fair market value was. They both defined it. They've both been in the real estate business for a significant period of time. They've both had more than just this one billboard, and therefore they properly did it. So that was the primary issue. There's only two issues in this case, and that is, should that testimony had been stricken, and secondly, was their testimony sufficient to sustain the verdict? And in both of those, I have to say that I think our position is absolutely correct. I take real umbrage at the counsel getting up and telling you what her witness testified to in this case. Her witness didn't testify to anything. And also, they didn't challenge anything. And I think the court knows that what they're talking about insofar as that what they want this court to decide is not in this case. Whether or not this is business income or rental income, that's coming down the pike. You have four cases coming right at you as to whether or not it was realty or personalty, whether or not it was rental income or whether it was business income. That's not the issue in this case. There is not a scintilla of evidence that it was business income. There was no objection to the fact that we testified that it was rent. There was no objection to the manner in which the witnesses evaluated the property. And so it would be improper, it seems to us, in some way, overturn this verdict or this judgment when that was what happened in the trial. Had prepared a very flowery and wonderful presentation for you today, which I'm sorry that you're going to miss. And I'm very sorry for all these attorneys general who are here who've come to hear me get up and talk. But I would just like to say that's our posture in this case. It's pretty simple. There's only two issues. Should he have struck the testimony? No doubt. No doubt. The guy didn't appraise the property properly, and so he struck him. They didn't have a backup witness. That's not where I'm going. Also, would the testimony that was given substantiate the verdict? No doubt about it.
Daly, your time's expired. And
thank you.
We'll hear the flowery testimony from Ms. Floyd.
All right. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I don't know how flowery I'm going to be in 10 minutes, but I would like to, first of all, before I go into a few prepared remarks, address a couple of questions that were asked. Justice O'Neill asked about whether or not there should be any credit in circumstances similar to this. And I would tell the court this, that the procedures in effect that are in the Texas Administrative Code, TxDOT's code, have a specific provision and have had so for years that if a outdoor advertising sign company, a billboard owner, elects to select a relocation permit in lieu of compensation, that owner must sign a waiver of damages. And that waiver is found in 43 Texas Administrative Code 21.160E. So this doomsday argument that the states presented in their briefs about, oh, the taxpayers are going to have these enormous burdens because they're going to have to pay millions in compensation and then the billboard owner is going to get a relocation permit and relocate, is simply not true. The waiver provision has been in the law for a very long time, and it just specifically provides that if they select relocation, they must sign a written waiver of eminent domain damages.
Does the case turn on whether there was an objection to the characterization of the money received as rent versus business income or profits?
Perhaps to a certain extent, Your Honor, and I would like to address that directly because the state's position here is that we will not create an exception for billboards. Our position is that you should not create an exception for billboards among all other income-producing properties. As this court said on many occasions, there are three recognized and acceptable approaches to evaluating property in eminent domain. The income approach is one of them, and it's routinely used for income-producing property, hotels, office buildings. And the state is incorrect when they say that that approach is only good when you're looking at rent received by an owner for like a lessee interest. It is the property, if it's a lessee, his leasehold is appraised as approved. And as far as hotels, for example, go, and billboard structures, that must take into consideration the income stream of that property. We're not talking about business profits. They're speculative, and that's an entirely different situation that possibly needs to be looked at case by case. But the income approach is particularly appropriate.
How is Viacom's interest divided up between Viacom and Cesson?
How was the interest divided up?
How is your interest? Assume that the judgment stands. What is the relationship between Viacom and Cesson over the division of this condemnation award, given the relationship of the parties?
A little bit of background. I really don't have too much time to go into it. But in the special commissioner's award awarded something like $850,000 to Viacom. When they settle with the state, they redeposited that into the registry of the court.
Oh, there's already an agreement.
There are two agreements in play here. One is an agreement between Viacom and the state by which Viacom redeposited the award minus the expenses that were incurred in, quote, relocating the sign, taking it down and erecting a new sign on a new site, and those are regulated by state regulations also. There was also an agreement between CESA and Viacom. That raises another point. The state complains about the inequity of the result of this trial. And I submit to the court that if there was an inequity, the state was in control of the circumstances of that trial. They had several procedures available to it to posture this case differently, to give the trial court an option. First of all, they had already settled with two other property interest owners. And what they did there is they entered into partial dismissals, which removed those people from the cases. They choose not to do that with Viacom because they had a continuing argument with Viacom about some interest, the state did, some interest on the award that was returned. So they wanted to keep Viacom in the case. They made that decision when it went to trial. Viacom, who is a property owner, and I believe, Justice Brister, you asked if Viacom had any real estate interest. Of course they did. They were the lessee. And Texas law could not be clearer that a lease is a property interest that must be compensated for in an eminent domain situation. Nevertheless, they had that opportunity to do a partial summary, a partial dismissal, just as they did with the others, which would have postured this case differently for reasons unique to themselves, whatever their
situation. But with Viacom, I mean, part of its revenue is because it's Viacom. I mean, part of the, if we value this whole property as to adding together the rental value of the land, of the easement, and the rental income and the income from advertising services, we're compensating partly in their business income, the provision of services to companies that want to advertise. Right?
I would not agree with that.
Let me put it this way. I understand the unified undivided fee rule. If I own property and a hotel on it that I'm running myself, then I get to value the whole thing, how much that hotel's worth to me. But if Hyatt's running the hotel, and I'm just getting rent from them putting it on there, presumably maybe the hotel will do better because it's Hyatt. But I don't get to, that doesn't make that we, undivided fee says we value it as if I owned the whole thing and operated the hotel. When we add a big company like Hyatt, that makes the property more valuable than it would be just to me if it was Brister's Hotel. And so it seems to me the way, if you split those two out and add them back together, you get something bigger than this if this was just CESA and CESA's billboard and anybody CESA could sell to. Aren't you ending up with a bigger pie?
No, Your Honor, no, Justice Brister, not really, because you're not really dividing and adding again. The undivided fee rule says you do value it as if owned by one person. In other words, you would value it under the assumption, the presumption, that the billboard, its ability to generate income,
right,
is all owned by one person.
Viacom's a big company.
Yes, but the
has
same...
Has lots of connections, has lots of salespeople, has lots of clients that rely upon them. And if it was me and my billboard, I probably couldn't make $168,000 a month.
If you owned a billboard at that location, yes, you could.
But isn't that reflected in the rent?
In the rent to the, say, the fee owner or the leasehold interest? As to their interest.
To the rent to the easement holder.
Yes. No, for their... value, valuation. What needs to be remembered is that the lessee's interest must also be valued. And their interest, a leasehold, a valid real estate interest, is an income-producing leasehold. And under Texas law, it's a perfectly valid and even preferred method of valuing the property.
Why would a restaurant be different? Because a restaurant is income-earning.
It's a distinction that is sometimes difficult to key on to, but here's a couple of ways that I've found that's very helpful for looking at it. The income approach is valid when the income-generating capacity can be transferred with the real estate. It doesn't depend on how good the food is. It doesn't depend on that business acumen or the capital invested. But in this situation, if Viacom had wanted to sell, and these are bought and sold in the marketplace because they're very valuable, if Viacom had wanted to sell this improved leasehold, that income generating capacity would have been transferred with the land because the income is the chief source of value of that property. It's not the beauty. It's a commercial property, and that's what a willing buyer would look to in making a decision as to whether or not it wants to buy the property.
How is that different from a restaurant?
A restaurant is, again, I go back to the example that the income-generating capacity would not necessarily be transferred or connected to the location of the restaurant.
Oh,
obviously.
I bet the Restaurant Association would disagree with you on that.
I'm sure they would, but that's not the primary. That is not the – obviously, clearly, certainly would not dispute that in any commercial establishment, access off the freeway may be important, where it is located in town. But that's not what primarily generates their revenue. What primarily generates the revenue of a McDonald's or a Gallery Furniture is the business acumen, the capital they've invested, et cetera, not where the property is located.
Are there any further questions?
May it please the court. First, in response to Justice Medina's question about SESA's losses, the state recognizes that SESA has suffered loss, and it's the state's belief that they're entitled to $360,000 for that loss based, if you use an income approach, and an income approach should be based on the rental income. And what they lost was the right to receive the rental income, not the right to receive the advertising income. Now, I believe there has been a misunderstanding perpetrated about the undivided fee rule and what that means. The way that it was referred to by respondents seems somehow to be that it means that you add together the interest and act as if one person owns a lot of different interests. But that's not what the undivided fee rule says. Under this rule, you act as if the property is actually owned by one person. If the property is owned by one person, you can't have a leasehold and a leased fee. You know, the landlord and tenant are never the same person.
Well, let's use that analogy and take me through the proper valuation method. If I own a home on property and I lease it to you, and then you turn around and you sublease it to someone else. Mm-hmm. And my rental to you is $10 a month, and your rental to that someone else is $100, to the subtenant, is $100 a month. How do I value that interest?
Well, your example would suggest that the first rental person is not receiving the market rate.
Yes.
And if that is, in fact, true, in that situation, you would look at the market rent.
Okay, so presume then that the market rent is $100 as reflected in the sublease. Then under your analysis, I would be entitled to a bonus payment of the difference, 90 and, 10 and 100. Because that's a benefit.
If the property... Yes, there would be.
Actually, you'd split 10 to her and 90 to the to her tenant.
Right. There would be a bonus value.
But how is that different here if people are, why wouldn't this sign operate the same way like a house? I've got my lease to you for X amount, then you lease it out to others for a higher amount.
Well, first of all,
do it the same way?
We're not basing the valuation just on the fact that the property has been subleased to a third person. That in and of itself doesn't create the value. We're only looking at the market rent. With the billboard situation, you have to look at the market rent, too. You don't look at the advertising income. I mean, with the home situation, there is no business income component.
So would it have been appropriate? I mean, is one way to evaluate this property would be to look at what third parties were paying for the sign and say that take out the middleman and say that if the owner could have gotten that revenue from third parties, then that's what the fair market of the rent should have been.
Mr. Wall did look at fair market rents for billboard sites, and he took that into account and determined that the actual rent that was being received was comparable to fair market rent for other billboard sites. You know, so that, in fact, was done in this case.
I know you're running out of time and probably have some things you want to tell us, but you just briefly address this billboard and why this isn't correct. Correct?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The confusion that came about in this case is the fact that under the undivided fee rule, what Mr. Wall should have been valuing was the easement, which was the land, the predominant interest. Now, the fact that easement was owned by SESA, who was then in turn leasing it to Viacom, every time that Mr. Wall said he was leasing and he was valuing the easement, the respondent SESA tried to characterize that as only a valuation of a part of the property. But the easement is a predominant interest. If you value the easement, you are valuing all of the interest. I mean, the whole idea of the rule is that you don't create value simply by having a multiplicity of interests. A piece of property that is owner-operated should be valued the same as a piece of property that is subject to a lease. The lease in itself doesn't create different values. And yes, he valued the easement, and they argue that because he valued the easement, which was the whole property, that he somehow only valued SESA's interest. But that simply is not true. Under the undivided fee rule, by valuing the easement, he was taking into account all of the interests. And, you know, this case certainly does not turn on the testimony characterizing the income as rent. Even the Court of Appeals recognized that the income being brought in by Viacom was business income and not rent. By its very nature, that it's being paid to Viacom and that it's being paid for advertising contracts, all of that was in the record. That's what makes it business income. You can't pretend that that's not true simply because somebody characterizes business income as rent. For all of these reasons, we ask that you reverse the judgments of the lower courts. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bonin. The cause is submitted. That concludes the arguments for this morning, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, now stands adjourned.